Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is well established that no contract can be enforced to do something illegal. So I'd start with that benchmark so that if there even were, which I'm about to explain that I don't believe there is, if there were an illegality or a conflict in this contract with existing laws, the contract would not be enforceable. That said, the provisions that have been raised have been part of the existing agreements for some time and are not being proposed for modification at this time. So it's just for folks to be aware. It's a somewhat confusing part about how major reforms that are collectively bargained get updated. And so it's a process section of the contract that explains how the existing pension ordinances, which outline when read together what types of pension plans we have. We have Fire 1, we have Fire 2, we have two different tiers under Fire 2. And it can be somewhat confusing because not everything is spelled out in this contract, but it raises points that says where there's discrepancies, but also where terms are omitted, the ordinance does take precedence. So it's a long way of saying, I understand there can be some confusion, but I do not see any illegality in the existing contract and would say that it's available for the, you know, for the council to consider and certainly welcome any other remarks from my colleague, Mr. Arcillo, as well.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. I would like to hear the comment. And by the way, what you just heard from Councilor Walsh is pretty much verbatim of the conversation that he and I had this afternoon. However, I want to make certain that we are on legal footing in pursuing or going into this contract any further. Solicitor, well, what's your opinion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It may be surprising that I actually agree with Councilor Walsh, two lawyers agreeing. That's a major accomplishment. You know, the issue with the references to the pension and the language that says that if there are any inconsistencies, this contract will take precedence. That is all written in there on a prospective basis in this sense. If in fact there is something that's agreed upon in a collective bargaining agreement, and again, this particular language goes back at least two or three agreements. I don't know exactly when, probably a lot further than that, other than the reference to 2018. That language is in there to prevent the city from, after signing a contract, then changing the ordinance to say something else, and then having the city say, well, the ordinance supersedes the contract, so therefore, what's in the contract is null and void. This gives the union the opportunity to say, well, that then violates the contracts clause of the Constitution, state law, et cetera. So that language is really in there to protect them going forward, so that in fact, the language on pensions that was agreed to between the two parties remains in place going forward. So that's, in that sense, very consistent with the observation that ordinances take precedence over contracts. But again, this is all prospective. It's not going backwards.
Okay, thank you. I feel that these type of things that are brought to our attention are important that we
absolutely
vet out, and it's important that we get it on the record.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions for me, or we bring Bruce up?
Yeah, I do have one question for you. When was the last time, to your knowledge, that the city of Warwick ever went before arbitration for anything?
I've only been here for the past 3 years. I am not sure for either police or fire.
2019 was the most recent. 2019 was the most recent.
2019, okay. I'm just obviously not aware.
And that's still pending, I believe. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All set? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kaiser.
Bruce Kaiser, Director of Economic Development, Council President, Council Members. I was Chief Negotiator along with several members of the staff, including the Chief of Staff, Bill Facenti, who couldn't be here this evening. Mike gave you the, Mr. Asillo gave you the parameters within which we operate for all the contracts, or public safety contracts. Arbitration is an option for police and fire, as has just been discussed. Granted that, it's important that we control our destiny the best that we possibly can with respect to what the outcome of the contract is going to be, as opposed to leaving it in the arbitrator's hands, that we don't know what the outcome is going to be. Mike importantly pointed out that one of the key elements under state law that the arbitrators consider is what are the neighboring departments doing in the area. We have the contracts from Providence and Cranston. They're the two largest other departments. East Providence, they're currently in negotiations, so we weren't able to obtain any data from them. But with Providence, they're just, in FY26, they'll be completing a five-year deal, 4% a year. Obviously, that compounded, you know, each year and so forth. Cranston is on the same cycle that we are, and their contract going forward through FY28 is 425. Now, that they split their, just as we have in this contract, we'll explain in a second, they split their raises July 1, January 1, in each of those contract years. Different formula was used, but you know, used the same staggered system. Annualized, Cranston's increases were 425, 45, 45. Our increases, as proposed, are 425, 45, 45. The cost of those contracts for the year are outlined in the fiscal note that Lynn Prodger, our finance director, has prepared. But budgetarily, the percentage increases, what were the appropriation necessary to fill those contracts, is because it's July 1, January 1 increases, is 3.64% in the first year, FY26 that we're currently in, 3.89 in the second year, and 3.89 year in the third year. Importantly, one of the elements, the key, two key elements comprise the basis for the negotiations with the fire union in for this three-year contract. One was they insisted, major demand that they put on the table was that they wanted parity with what the police contract is. As Mike pointed out, that's something that the arbitrator is going to consider as well. What does the other public safety union get in the city? So this contract is equivalent to what was awarded to the police with the ratification last January. In addition to, you know, the outside contracts that I just mentioned, but in addition to contract wage increases, the other key element for the city was ensuring that OPEB, 2% OPEB employee contribution is continued ad infinitum into the future. This, the police contract and the municipal contract that you ratified back in January has a schedule of one-third, one-third, one-third each year getting to that 2%. The fire contract, which 3 years ago was ratified, called for a 2% increase as soon as the other two unions came on board so that everybody was on an equivalent basis. Because the other union agreements that we were able to reach phased in those OPEB contributions by the employees, we had to go to a memorandum of agreement with the fire union earlier this year to synchronize that agreement with what the municipal and the police contracts contain. That contract or that agreement expires in FY27. If we don't get a three-year agreement with this with the IAFF, not only does the OPEB for fire disappear, but because all the contracts are looking for equivalency, they all disappear. So we would have to be in the position of having to renegotiate an OPEB from square one. If we go to arbitration, the arbitrator is not going to consider a three-year agreement. They're going to, as Mike just explained, we're in a one-year deal. That puts entire OPEB in jeopardy. We have to go back to the table with all the unions again. And yeah, as you know from the conversation we had with the regarding the police and fire or police and municipal unions, it's a give and take. Yeah, that we were looking for the OPEB contribution to get that program kickstarted with the employees participating significantly. And we had to trade off some salary increases in order to achieve that. So should we end up going to arbitration in this case and we lose OPEB and have to go back to the table, back to square one, everything's back on the table with respect to the pay increases that they'd be willing to agree to, given the fact that they've got more leverage and so forth. So very, we believe as administration, it's very critical that we were able to lock in a deal with the fire union, meaning all three unions at this point, for you know, the, well, obviously ad infinitum with respect to the 2% OPEB until that would be renegotiated sometime in the future by potentially a future administration. So those are the key elements of this contract. Contract raises in parity with internally with the police department and externally with comparable fire departments. So those are really the linchpins of the agreement. As the fiscal note indicates, what is the cost annually to the city for the body of the contract? As Lynn has pointed out, the first year is $987,000. This is net of the employee OPEB contribution, which displaces what the city appropriations have been in the last couple of years. $949,000 in the second year of the contract, $915,000 in the third year of the contract. So we were just under $1 million each year. What does that mean? Because obviously the important element to the council, to the administration, and larger and you know, more importantly to the community is, what does this cost the taxpayer? I've spoken with our tax assessor, and in order to raise essentially about $1 million, if it were to come out, if funding this contract were entirely through property taxes, opposed to some other outside sources of revenue that might come in from our other non-property tax revenues, would be a nickel on the tax rate. Current median residential home is taxed at, or is assessed at about $400,000. So we're looking at $20 a year for the median homeowner to fund this particular contract, absent any other non-property tax revenues that may become available in the future. So that's the central elements of the contract. Beyond that, as noted in Lynn's memo, there are other cost items that are included in the contract. Just to go through a few of them, the clothing and maintenance allowances are each up $50. Each of those will cost $10,000 a piece annualized, so $20,000 for the clothing allowance and the clothing maintenance. There's a berthing policy. Chief McMichael can explain how he envisions that playing out with respect to time off and light duty for berthing. Family sick leave is granted to 192 hours, but that comes out of their sick leave balances. Importantly, the fifth year rescue has been memorialized into the contract. Finance director can talk about the cost of what that is, but that's city had already committed policy-wise to maintaining that fifth rescue for response times and public safety purposes. Fire retirees will be eligible to those newer firefighters that are only eligible for individual health care in the future will be able to buy up when they eventually retire to a family plan at their cost, not the city's cost. And then finally, just another minor item, the detail pay, both non-civic and civic details. We fire union negotiated the city to raise that rate from to the captain's OT rate of pay. That's going from $72 an hour to $60 an hour. I mean, $60 an hour to $72 an hour, approximately. That's paid by outside entities anyway. And on civic, we're instead of state straight time, we'll pay overtime rate. So those are the central cost items associated with the contractor. Any further questions? Happy to answer them.
Thank you for that. I'm going to let you know that Chairman. The council president has asked, Mayor?
Chairman, I'm sorry. At every other contract we brought before here, the finance committee has always asked if the union wanted to make an address, and I forgot to bring that up in my remarks.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said.
In every other time I brought the contracts before the council, the finance chair has always asked the union to come up and make a statement, and I kind of forgot about that.
Oh, I will.
I didn't. Okay.
I will. No worries.
My error. I'm sorry.
No worries. The council president has also asked me to recess this committee at 6:20 because of other time constraints that we have, and I am happy to honor that wish. So we will recess until such time as the council president tells us to come back. Thank you.
Much obliged.
Thank you. With the finance committee at ease and recess, we would ask the public properties, land use, and community affairs committee to come forward as we need to address a zoning matter before the full council.
The City Council Committee on Public Properties, Land Use, and Community Affairs comes to order at 6:23 p.m. Acceptance of minutes from committee meeting held on October 20, 2025. Do we have a motion? We have a motion. Do we have a second? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
We have two items on the docket. First up, PCO 27-25. An ordinance amending Appendix A, Zoning Ordinance of the City of Warwick regarding fences, drive-through window overhead clearance, and special use permit lot size standards for duplexes. City of Warwick, petitioner, citywide. This is Council President Sinapi on behalf of Mayor Picozzi. Council President, I take it that you would request that this be moved to the floor for public hearing?
Yes, please. Request public hearing.
Thank you. We have a recommendation. Do we have a motion to move to the floor without recommendation?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And we have one last item on the docket for this meeting. Item two, PCR 108-25, a resolution in observance of Native American Heritage Month. This is my resolution. It looks like we have enough time for a discussion before the full City Council meeting at 6:30. So I'll open the discussion by stating that I think it's important, similar to the various other Heritage and History Months we have recognized throughout the year, to recognize the contribution of Native Americans to this country, to this city and state, and make a statement that people of all races, all backgrounds, are celebrated here in Warwick, and their appreciate and their work, their contributions, and diversity are appreciated here in the city of Warwick. Any further discussion, members of the committee? Any discussion, members of the council? Any discussion, members of the public? Do we have a motion for favorable action?
Move favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. There being no further business before the committee, the committee adjourns at 6:25 p.m.
Next up, would the Intergovernmental Committee please convene? Good evening. Time is now 6:26 and the Intergovernmental Committee comes to order. First order of business, acceptance of meeting of the minutes from the committee meeting held on October 20th, 2025. Do I have a motion?
Make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And our first piece of business is PCR 9325, resolution amending the rules of the City Council for the 2025-2026 term. The sponsor is Council President Sinapi. He has requested that this be held to
17th, please.
To what was that?
17th November, of November.
November 17th. Do I have a motion to hold?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. There being no further business of the Intergovernmental Committee, we close at 6:27. Next up, the City Council will convene in about 2 minutes, 6:30 p.m.
Well, I brought some. I'm sorry, what?
Did you ask for the insurance for the relationship?
She actually got me, my old insurance wanted to go up $130 a month. My agent got me a month. So I'm paying, instead of paying $430 a month, I'm paying $295 now for two cars with glass coverage. No, I'm sure. I just had up my car and I was behind a truck, kicked a rock up, and I heard something. Then I didn't notice the crack till the next day. They said, so I called Sonia, my agent. She said, well, they'll come right to your house or wherever the car is. It was great. She said, you won't have to pay anything. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they, yeah, yeah. Hello, Vincenzo. Oh, still on.
So at 6:31 p.m., council will convene. Clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Snappy?
Here.
Mr. DeLuise? Mr. Foley? Mr. Gephardt?
Here.
Mr. Kirby?
Here.
Mr. Lattiser?
Here.
Mr. Muto?
Here.
Mr. Napa?
Here.
Mr. Ricks?
Here.
Nine present.
If Councilman Muto can please lead us in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First up is general communications, announcements of congratulations, condolences, or community events. Does anyone have anything for general communications? All right, seeing nothing, we move on to executive communications, to which there are none. Acceptance of minutes from council meeting held on October 20th, 2025. Does anyone have any objection to approving the October 20th, 2025 minutes as presented? Seeing none, so approved. And then next, we go to referred business. First is PCO 27-25, an ordinance amending Appendix A, zoning ordinance of the City of Warwick regarding fences, drive-through window overhead clearance, and special use permit lot size standards for duplexes, City of Warwick petitioner, citywide. So administration, take it away. Oh, first, we need someone to open a public hearing, though. Do we have a motion for such? Motion made by Councilman Gebhardt, seconded by Councilman Mito. All in favor? All opposed? All righty.
Hi, good evening. Tom Kravitz, City Planning Director. The driving force behind the amendments you have before you is really the additional table that we have in the special use permit section. this table was in the zoning ordinance, actually, prior to our amendments that we made last time. What we did was, at that time, we and the council agreed we would require duplex units to be reviewed under special use permit by the planning board. Didn't make much sense to have such small-scale developments come before the council, and there are quite a few of them. So when we made that change, inadvertently, there was a table in the PDR section that had particular standards for duplexes. It was deleted. We tried it for a year to see how it would go, and we think the staff at the planning department, the duplex units we're seeing on the A, within the A7 zone district, it's just a little too dense. We're seeing some overbuilding in neighborhoods, and the feedback we're getting from residents isn't great. So we want to put this table back in, and all it simply does is mandates slightly larger lot sizes in each zone district for duplex units. So the planning board will still review them as special use permit, but we will have this table back, which should give us a little bit more, literally breathing room, if you will, with these proposals when they come forward. The other two changes are pretty straightforward, as I'm sure you've read about fences. Speaking with Al DeCourt, it just doesn't make sense to have mandatory permit requirements and zoning for fences anymore. Very few communities do it. And we made a small minor change to a minimum height requirement for drive-throughs for canopy height that you can see in there as well. So we are still requiring permits for fences, I should say, in historic districts and National Register properties, as well as providing notice to abutters in those situations, just to be sure they could coordinate fence types in case you have a situation where both property owners are looking to put up fences, trying to get people to work together on the type of fence that might be erected in those situations. With that, really, I have nothing else to say. I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Council President, if I may.
Hold on one moment, please. Solicitor Walsh can chime in.
Thank you, members of the council. Just want to put on record, there's two grammatical errors on page one, line 44. The word height is missing a T, and the word within has a G on it. We would correct those with your approval after the hearing.
All right, Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. So without throwing any shade here, no offense is intended, it was incredibly, very much directly as intentional can possibly be when I introduced the amendment to set forth the zoning as to two-family houses, sometimes referred to as duplexes. I thought that I had made that very clear in the amendment itself last time around. I thought that I stated that logic in the argument for that amendment the last time around. And that amendment, if memory serves, was passed unanimously by the City Council at the time. The logic being that we live in a city, there is a housing crisis. As long as all of the other zoning restrictions, that is height, setback, lot size, et cetera, are all being met, I don't see anything, say, morally objectionable or otherwise degradational to the character of the neighborhood when it comes to a two-family house being on a
conforming lot that's traditionally known as a single family size lot. Part of that, and I'm not going to repeat the whole speech from, I believe it was a year or two ago, when my parents became divorced, my father rented an apartment in the neighborhood. Now, that apartment, that three-family house, my God, do I hear any gasps of horror that there could be a three-family house in a residential neighborhood in Warwick? I didn't think so. So, he moved into a three-family house, rented an apartment there. And you know what? Everything worked out like that. There was no moral outrage. It was fine. You can have a neighborhood with primarily single-family houses and have some duplexes mixed in, and it's not going to destroy the neighborhood. It's going to increase the housing supply. It adds to the character of the neighborhood. It's also, especially these days, I understand that there are some trends, some correlations. Now more than ever, we're even seeing many single-family houses being bought up, rented out, whether it's Airbnb or long-term rental. And we see a lot of that, of course, with duplexes as well. But with duplexes, we also see the trend of a family being able to buy a house, live in that house on one side of it, and then rent out the second side of it in order to afford it. And there you have it. Owner-occupied residential housing. Not that we should necessarily be making judgments here either about ownership versus rental. Neither one of them is immoral. Just saying. So here we are in a housing crisis. We have a city that is already very much built up. And then we also have various state laws that are affecting our local housing stock as well with accessory dwelling units. So we effectively have de facto two-family housing by state law, except a lot of the cumbersome nature of accessory dwelling units is that they wind up having to conform to some pretty odd rules and the like, which I think are going to just be a bit of a regulatory mess and the like. I've seen quite a lot of that in my day job. And then as a result of some of the complications with ADUs, you wind up having units that aren't quite suitable. They aren't quite being built to what the need is. Anyways, I can understand some of the NIMBYism going on. There's always going to be some pushback, but there also has to be a balance. With Warwick as it is, as built up as it already is, this is not going to be some sort of a cataclysmic change where we're going to just see single-family houses ripped down all around the city. In fact, from experience, that's not what we're seeing. So for all of those reasons, I don't want to keep going on about the morality of duplexes. For all of those reasons, I think it's important that we keep this as it is, as to the duplexes. After all, we're in a housing crisis here. Let's not be adding to any of that. On the other two items, those changes are perfectly fine with me. They seem to be well thought out, well reasoned, and I would support those two other items. So after discussion, I would intend to introduce an amendment to remove the proposed changes to the duplexes while keeping the other two reforms. Thank you.
All right, so before we get to council people first, is there anyone here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning amendment? Is there anyone here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning amendment?
Michelle Comar, good evening. I live in Ward 1. Well, I've had an opportunity to rub elbows and get into the trenches of people that are affected by this without the change going forth that we need. We need it because people are affected, mainly in Ward 6. I have friends out in Ward 6 that do speak forward about this. We had a meeting at the planning board level, and there were objectors there where there was one existing house. The developer came in because, I'll just call this loophole, and put four family units in. One family, same property, four families. And they were very aggressive in getting it done before this change came before you, such that they're not going to wait. And the moratorium on a new road pavement and no cuts are allowed, they're going to put propane gas there because they don't want to cut the pavement and go through the gas company and the moratorium on new pavement. They're in a hurry to put up these units. This is a loophole that didn't exist at one time, and it inadvertently just came, and it was overlooked, and we need to repair what was there before. That's all this is. Now, I do read the Province Journal about our housing crisis, and it's reported over and over again. Rhode Islanders don't have enough income to buy the new houses. And they had a list of municipalities. That includes Warwick. It's people from out of state are coming in to buy our new houses. So all we're doing is replacing Rhode Islanders with out-of-state people. No offense, that's fine. I have friends that live in Massachusetts as well. The point is, the people that live in Warwick are going to be displaced. I don't know where we get this concept. There is a housing shortage. There isn't. It's Rhode Islanders can't afford the homes that are here. There's nothing in our zoning ordinance that says, oh, we have to have these duplexes be affordable housing. I think the affordable housing definition may not catch a lot of Rhode Islanders. May not catch a lot of people in Ward 6 that want their kids to live in the same place they grew up. This is a needed repair. It's a repair. Now, I get calls from people who live in these places that are affected by this, and they know I've lived in the city for 20, 25 years. So I reached out to as many people as I could to come here and tell their experiences. But to see one house being replaced by four, you know there's going to be added traffic impacts that are not really considered if you just say we can allow duplexes anywhere. So the whole density of the city can change. We haven't talked to this. Nobody's talked to the sewer authority, at least at the last planning board meeting when one of these projects came up on Ward 6. Are we increasing the sewer capacity beyond what can be handled in each substation? These are all unknowns. So I'm in favor of this ordinance amendments. The fence amendment is great. I'm in support of that as well. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning change?
Hello, my name is Roberta Ridoni, and I agree with her. I actually live in Ward 6 on Pinehurst Avenue, and there are two duplexes going up on one lot, so that's four families, and it used to be one family house, so I'm concerned about that. Okay.
Can you just do us a favor and repeat your name? My apologies.
Roberta Idoni. I live at 54 Pinehurst Avenue, and the two duplexes are on one oversized lot at 73 at the corner of my street. And I moved into the neighborhood because it was a nice, quiet neighborhood, and now there's going to be four families on one lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone else here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone else here to speak in favor of the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone here to speak against the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone here to speak against the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone here to speak against the proposed zoning modification? Is there anyone here who just wants to speak on the proposed zoning modification? So neither yay nor nay. Anyone else here to speak on the proposed zoning modification? Anyone else here to speak on the proposed zoning modification? Seeing none, can someone move to close the public hearing, please?
So moved.
Seconded by Councilman Foley. All in favor?
Mr. President.
Pardon?
We still have...
Yep, so we're going to go to the council right when the public hearing closes. So all in favor of closing the public hearing? All opposed? You're going to make me do the other one? Before we close?
Before we close.
All right. So public hearing is hereby closed. So now...
Council President, if the council would like to entertain a motion to fix the grammatical errors as read into the record, page 1, line 44.
So moved.
So this is just to fix the two grammatical errors noted by Solicitor Walsh. Councilman Ricks has made a motion for such, seconded by Councilman Gebhardt. All right, if the clerk could please call the roll on that. This is just to do the grammatical changes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattisa?
Yes.
Mr. Buto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Not yet.
All right, very belatedly now, Councilman DeLuise. The timing is impeccable, sorry. All right, we'll go to Councilman Lattiser first.
Thank you. So, Director, what is the problem that you're trying to solve with this change?
I think that the duplexes that are being proposed that I'm seeing in the different neighborhoods in Warwick are a bit out of character with what's there historically. The development is a bit too dense. You had a couple, I think, in your ward, if you remember last year. It was contentious. Contrary to what Councilman Ricks has said, I am seeing people buying houses. Ward 6 has a lot of old housing stock that hasn't changed in 80 years. People are buying up those homes, and they're proposing duplexes on small lots, and it's kind of a shock to the neighborhood. So we figured we would put back the table that was in the zoning ordinance to begin with. And we're building housing units. There's a lot of units being approved by the planning board, even without this duplex situation. So I think it'd be good to put it back.
And with respect to an ADU, if an ADU is added on to a single family home, will this now classify them as a duplex?
No.
Okay.
No. And to get to your first question, Councilman, and for the audience, you know, by way of example, the table we're putting back in, you are considering for that anyway, in the A7 zone, 7,000 square foot lot, minimum lot size, the table would require 10,500. A10 requires 15,000. A 15,000 square foot lot in an A15 would have to be 22,500. And then in the southwestern portion of the city, which is primarily suburban single family, the A40 zone, you would have to have a lot size of 60,000 square feet. So just, you know, over an acre. An acre is 43,560. So you'd need 60,000 square feet to meet the special use permit standard to put a duplex there. Just by way of keeping special use permits with the planning board, it's still going to go faster. I mean, to come to the council and do zoning change amendments every time you propose a duplex, that takes 3 weeks just to advertise it. It's going to take 2 months just to get through here that's still off the table. The planning board will still review these as special use permits, and I think that's a good thing. That's accelerating housing construction, consistent with what Councilman Ricks wants. I just think that this table would make it a little more in keeping with the neighborhoods that are primarily single family as we try to do that.
So I just want to reiterate, if someone puts on an ADU, it will not be considered a duplex.
No, that's okay. An ADU.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilman Gebhardt.
Thank you, Director. Just a quick question. Is the inclusion of this table in any way inconsistent with any of the new state housing laws that govern this type of activity?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman DeLuise.
With all due respect, Councilman Ricks, I have to disagree with what you said. I was on the zoning board for 6 years. A lot of times, approvals that shouldn't have been approved possibly got approved, and it's just time that developers, I believe, they try to put these giant houses on postage stamp lot sizes, 3,500 square feet, 4,000 square feet, and you know, the use of the land is, it says, not for profit, but 9 out of 10 times these houses and multifamily units are for profit. I mean, that's what developers do. So I respectfully disagree with what you've said. I think I like the table, and hopefully it works.
Councilman Napo.
Thank you. Director, just correct me if I'm wrong. Was your test, I wasn't here at the previous council when this was removed. Is this the exact same table that's going back into the ordinance?
Yeah.
It is. Now, the contemplation of excess size needed for a duplex that seems to be about like one third extra.
Right.
The original space, the zone space. Third. Okay, yeah. Okay. Now, given that this is slightly extra, well, not slightly, 50% more space needed to qualify under this table, what was the justification for removing it the first time? Because I doubt that it was just inadvertent.
No, it was inadvertent. What we dealt with that night on 12/20/23 was the entire legislative changes. We made a ton of changes to the zoning code, and taking duplexes out of PDR, again, away from the council, having to essentially bother you with a duplex every other month, everyone agreed, yes, let's bring it to planning board as special use permit. The table wasn't carried over with it unless, Councilman, you knew that and you didn't want the table in. I don't want to speak for you. Maybe that's okay. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's fine.
It was incredibly intentional.
So when you have a special use permit request before a planning board, there has to be particular standards in the special use section. I'm simply trying to put this table back into that section so the planning board has the ability to deny them in certain circumstances where they feel it's appropriate to do so. Absent of that, we have to just default to the zoning minimums, A7 and so on. And if they can fit these things in there, then they'll be approved.
So without this table, did the zoning board not have the ability to disapprove a duplex application?
No, the zoning board had the ability to do so when the table was in place. But in the context of a PDR, though, at that time, zoning never saw these. They go from planning board. Planning board gives the advisory recommendation to the council to make the zone change. They handle this as a zone change every time. So it was the planning board dealing with them, not so much the zoning board at all.
I suppose I misspoke. Did the planning board have the ability to disapprove a duplex?
No. Not without this table in there.
No, so there was no discretion. Right. It was just...
Right, there's no... This table serves as the primary, you know, special use permit standard now, dimensional standards that we hope to put back. There's a number of these in the queue that you haven't seen. You may have seen some housing demolition on certain properties. There's a number of these already approved that you'll see off of West Shore Road that are going to be built. I have two relatively significant applications in my office now that are have already been submitted because of this change is coming. So it's an active application, if you will. We see these duplexes a lot. So we just thought, my staff and I thought we should put the table back because things are kind of, every time we have a meeting with these, it's a bit of an eruption in the neighborhoods. We're just trying to maintain the community character. A lot of these neighborhoods are single family neighborhoods. You know, they don't even have any duplexes in them. I think that's kind of the shock. So when you see a number of them coming, it's a bit of a shock. I know how much housing this city is building, so I'm comfortable. I could stand here and tell you, we have a lot of housing units that have come online that are going to come online. Even if we make this change, it's not going to stop duplex development.
In the A10, A15, and A40 neighborhoods, how many, I don't know, you probably don't have an exact number, but are there a fair amount of lots that would conform to these minimum lot areas needed, or does this effectively exclude those properties? I'm looking, I mean, I think specifically for the A15 and the A40, those are massive lots, especially the A40. 60,000 feet is...
There's a number in the A15 and A40 as well. I think we're seeing it in the A7 and the A10 so much because those are the zone districts where you have the older housing stock, Oakland Beach neighborhoods, where it's worth buying a house and just knocking it down and putting up duplexes. You're not going to see that so much in the southwestern part of the city, even the A40.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
To clarify, if there is an undersized lot, let's say it's in an A7 zone, whether it's 3,000, 4,000, even say 6,999 square feet undersized, can a duplex, rather, I'll rephrase that, in any type of undersized lot, the board would have the ability to reject a special use permit, correct? That is under the ordinances as they exist now without this amendment.
Not if it conforms to all the setbacks within that respective zone district. It's very difficult. If you meet the side setbacks, rear setbacks of an A7, and you can fit a duplex in there, there's technically no dimensional relief.
So lot size as... So are you saying that the lot size is essentially meaningless so long as the setbacks are met?
The problem is it's required by special use permit now. So absent of any standards, the board really has to approve these. This table represents the standards in the special use permit section of the zoning ordinance.
So to clarify, if the lot size doesn't matter, then what are we even doing here with this? I think my position...
I mean, we can deny them, but they'll be appealed and we'll lose every single time because we have no standards in special use permit.
Well, we do have standards. A7, 7,000 square foot minimum. So you're asking us for a change to the lot size because...
Then why allow it by special use permit? Just make it by right.
Because this is the way to actually have some enforcement mechanism.
Councilman, you have 30 seconds left.
Thank you. So this is the way to have some sort of enforcement mechanism to trigger a hearing in front of the board.
And the board has discretion. If the person is asking legitimately for a variance, the board does not have to automatically grant a variance for an undersized lot. So if we're talking about, and this is a complete counterfactual, if lot size doesn't matter, then why are we even having this discussion whatsoever? We could bump this up to plus 1,000,000% and everyone gets through, or we could bump it down to 1 square foot and it would make absolutely no difference. Of course it makes a difference. That's why we're here. And of course it makes a difference that the board has discretion, and the board can reject based on a failure to meet that minimum lot size. So what I'm saying is that if neighbors are having an issue with a duplex built on a postage stamp lot, they should go to the board, and the board already has full authority to reject that under the ordinance as it exists today. I'll also just add briefly that no, two duplexes cannot go up on a single lot. And there are protections there when it comes to subdividing of lots too. That also has to go through a process. So I just find this whole presentation, pardon me for this, but it's a big old boogeyman. And that is just smacks of NIMBYism. And that's the last thing that we need baked into these standards when we already have so many restrictions. And I'll just echo myself from the previous meeting a year or two ago when we approved this in the first place. This is America. People have property rights. And I think that Americans should be able to build a duplex on their own land so long as all of those setbacks and minimum lot size requirements and all of those are being met. Let's solve this housing crisis. Let's let people build on their own land as long as it's meeting all of these other restrictions. Thank you.
So good news, Councilman. I misread my timer. You had more time left. Bad news, you used that time. So, Councilman Muto.
Hi, Director. Hi. Unfortunately, I am the recipient of a lot of the undersized lots and the duplex and double duplexes on the lots.
Right.
Will you just clarify for me and the rest of the council why we need this change to avoid some of the unintended consequences for some of these lots?
Because applicants are making applications to the planning board as a special use permit. That's how they're allowed right now. And you need standards and to grant special use permit. So this is what the table represents. To Councilman Ricks's point, if you all agree with him, just change it to be allowed by right and not special use permit. Then the planning board can just look at dimensional relief in each respective district. It's this special use permit type of application that's triggering this. They either got to go together. You got to allow duplexes by special use permit with this table in that section, or just make it allowed by right for duplexes, and we wouldn't put the table in the section. I think that's a fair way to characterize. You can't apply dimensional relief in special use permit circumstances as the only measure of relief. So I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, sort of. But then I started seeing Rick's, Councilman Rick's head agree. Are you agreeing with this?
Well, no.
No?
He's not. No. Agreeing with this as it's written, my suggestion to change duplexes to be allowed by right, that would be a little Y in the use table. You know, that's one thing. That's not how it is today. It's an S today. And if it's going to remain an S, we should put this table back in the special use permit standard section of zoning.
So one more follow-up question. If somebody wanted to build a duplex, they're not stopped by doing it. It's a different process.
Certainly. Right.
You're not selling me on this. You got to sell me.
What? They got to go to the planning board for a special, to obtain a special use permit.
Okay.
Under the current status.
Okay. Thanks.